Lord be with you.
And
a reading from the Holy Gospel according to St. Matthew. Jesus told this parable to his disciples. The reign of God can be likened to 10 bridesmaids who took their torches and went out to welcome the groom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. The foolish ones, in taking their torches, brought no oil along, but the sensible ones took flasks of oil as well as their torches. The groom delayed his coming, and so they all began to nod and fall asleep. At midnight, someone shouted, "The groom is here, come out and greet him." At the outcry, the virgins woke up and got their torches ready. The foolish ones said to the sensible ones, "Give us some of your oil. Our torches are going out." But the sensible ones replied, "No, there may not be enough for you and us. You had better go instead to the dealers and buy yourselves some." While they went off to buy it, the groom arrived, and the ones who were ready went in to the wedding feast with him. And then the door was barred. Later, the other bridesmaids came along. "Master, master," they cried, "open the door for us." But he said to them, "I tell you, I do not know you." The moral of the story is, keep your eyes open, for you do not know what day or what hour the Master is coming. The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise you, Lord.
So you had Father Jason last week, right? Nice to have a Vicksburg native, a native son, a priest from Vicksburg, Mississippi, and nice to have a young guy here for a change, right? Us older guys, and he talked about vocations, and he loved being here, and you all enjoyed having him here. And I went to St. Francis, he got the better of that deal. I went to St. Francis and I said 4 masses and preached at all 4. He got the better of the deal, really, in terms of... they had asked me to speak on stewardship there. You know, they had talked about, and they said, "Hey, let's bring in somebody with a differing perspective." You know what stewardship is? What is it? Pardon? You know what it is? It's about giving. Okay, yeah. And it's about giving money? We hate that, right? That's a very small piece of it. You know what stewardship is? It's much more about prayer than it is about money. Tell me how much time you spend in prayer and communication with Him. Don't tell me how much money you give. Tell me how much time you spend in communion with Him. That tells me much more about stewardship than the amount of money you give. We've had ridiculous notions about that. Stewardship, when we hear, we think, well, they're going to be asking for more money. Well, yeah, probably along the way. But the Lord will tell me what to give. Have no doubt about it. I've had a lot of people that really understood that concept along the way, and they've been great teachers to me. Being wise, knowing how to be responsive as a steward. Today's readings, what a beautiful presentation of that. Did you happen to notice that first reading? Is that a yes? Good. Good. Let me remind you. It says, from the book of wisdom, resplendent and unfading is wisdom, and she is readily perceived by those who love her and found by those who seek her. Notice the feminine. It doesn't say found by those who seek him. Found by those who seek her. Why is it a feminine verb? Because it is so much generally found in women, the wisdom. See, us men, we're about knowledge and storing knowledge, and we think knowledge is control and power. No, it's not. Sorry, I hate to bust the bubble, but the truth is, no, it is not. Wisdom, remember it, for us as confirmed people, confirmed in Christ and confirmed in the gift of the Holy Spirit. What's the number one gift? Remember them? You learned them by heart when you were in school, surely. Wisdom, understanding, counsel, fortitude, knowledge, piety, and awareness or awe in the presence of the Lord. Wisdom at the top of that list. Do you have wisdom? It's not a trick question, really. Do you have wisdom? From whence do you get your wisdom? Where does your wisdom come from? It's pure gift. You can't read about it and store up knowledge. That's knowledge. Wisdom is not knowledge. Wisdom can be complemented by good knowledge. Wisdom is the gift that is given us by God. The ultimate personification of wisdom is God Himself. Spoken of consistently throughout the Old Testament. He is the wise one. He is the embodiment of all wisdom. He is the one who shares that gift with us. Having wisdom, what a great gift. And so the author could say beautifully, resplendent and unfading is wisdom, and she is readily perceived by those who love her. Do you love wisdom? Or do you prefer knowledge? And it is found by those who seek her. She hastens to make herself known in anticipation of their desire. Whoever watches for her at the dawn shall not be disappointed, for he shall find her sitting at his gate. Wow. What a beautiful reflection. Do you seek wisdom? It's a real difference maker in life. Wisdom, to be able to make appropriate decisions and judgments and responses. For taking thought of wisdom is the perfection of prudence. And whoever for her sake keeps vigil shall quickly be free from care. Wow, wouldn't that be nice? I would be free from care because I have wisdom. And I am not controlling or attempting to control. He has that part covered. It is the essence of faith as well. Because she makes her own rounds, seeking those worthy of her, and graciously appears to them in ways and meets them in all solicitation. For everybody who asks. That's where wisdom, understanding, and counsel, but wisdom at the top of that list. What a great gift. Do you seek wisdom in your life? Maybe it's the real thing we should be seeking, more than power or control or be able to take care of. Wisdom. How do I navigate in these challenging times and challenging experiences? We're trying to do it as a church community. About 8 months ago, we joined with a group, another parish in Canada. And Father James Mallon is the author of the book, Divine Renovation. And it caught our attention, and we all read it, and the whole staff read it. And then we became engaged in it, trying to find wisdom. And particularly learning from them things that they have attempted to apply and to study and to be reflective on so that we could join them in that process. And one of the things they recommended to us was having a senior leadership team and particularly look for people who have different gifts than I have. I have a few, but try and complement all of those other gifts so that we're not all thinking just the same. And the centerpiece is this. We've talked about it a lot. More than 70% of our people are not going to church on a regular basis. Does that concern you? I think it does. I think it concerns everybody. But being concerned is not sufficient. We got to take steps and do something and have some action about it. And for us, I think one of the real central responsibilities are how are we inviting young people today to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ? Do you feel a responsibility for that? I hope you do. Because abdicating that responsibility to the priests or to the teachers or the people that we push forward doesn't work. That's what the gospel and that's what wisdom is about. Wisdom is knowing that I am engaged in this process of the proclamation of the kingdom of God. And because others have been generous in their response and providing me and opening up the opportunity for me to grow in faith, so now it has fallen to me to have a responsibility in that area. And so Divine Renovation suggested that we have a team of leadership people, four, five, six people, not too many beyond that. We have six people. We have John McGregor, whom we hired as administrator back in December of last year. And then we have Mike Brechtel. That's the three of us guys, and we have three women as well. Sarah O'Donnell and Cecilia Carlton and Rebecca Harris. We've spent hours going over some of this stuff. We meet at least twice a month. We're trying to meet every week to be reflective and say, what's really important to us? What do you treasure? What do you treasure about Jesus Christ and about that relationship? What do you treasure about church? How do we take on the energy and the effort to pass it on? What wisdom do we need to do this effectively, to be guided by Him so that it becomes His and not just ours? So we're working on that, and hopefully we will bring to fruition many things that we are learning. We're also in conjunction with five other parishes throughout the United States and Canada that we talk with regularly on webinars, both individually and collectively as a group, and say, what are you doing? How important is your parish community to you? How important is it to live in a community of people that are professing faith and seeking a personal relationship with Jesus Christ in their lives? It could never be emphasized sufficiently. The gospel, you like it? You've heard it a bunch of times, right? Five were foolish and five were wise. When I was growing up in elementary school, we used to have a book of parables. And some people said to me when I talked about this before, we didn't have the parables. We had a book of them, small little book about this size, and told all of these parables. And we'd have to learn the stories and be able to reiterate it to the schoolmaster and tell him. And then we understood, had no clue. We could tell the story, but I had no clue about the nuances of this. This is a great parable. You like it? Pardon? Yeah. Maybe? Maybe not. Well, when you look at very carefully the nuances in the parable, it's pretty powerful. When we have a wedding today, it's quite an event, right? People put a whole lot of energy and a whole lot of effort into planning appropriately, planning the preparations for the celebration, the wedding itself, and all of the details. People spend months. The church encourages people to let us know 6 months ahead of time so that you can go through appropriate preparation and be prepared to celebrate. And there are lots of details in terms of who's going to be in the wedding and who's going to be reading and who's going to be taking part in various, and the band and the celebration and all those things. Huge effort. And ultimately, it's over in a few hours, right? Yeah, that's the kind of shocker. But it still takes a huge amount of energy and time and effort to get into it. In Jesus' time, it was much simpler. In fact, I saw it with my own eyes in Mexico many years ago when we were down at Saltillo on the mission and had a group of kids, you know, from Vicksburg, you know, the first time I ever went, and we had like 35, 40 kids, and we'd travel out to these ranchos way out, far out in the villages, and one day they were having a wedding, and I said to Father Quinn, well, what time is the wedding? He said, hey, the wedding will happen when we get there. Cool idea, hey. And that was exactly it. Now, we picked up people along the way who were headed to the wedding. There were a bunch of people who had moved in a few days before for the wedding. But it was a great fiesta all the way. And then when the priest arrived, they rang the church bell, and that was the invitation to the kids to come for catechism. And then they rang another bell, and that was the announcement, the wedding will be an hour from now, so time for the bride to get dressed and time to stop the fiesta for now, and come on and we'll have the celebration. It was a little bit like that in Jesus' time. It was customary for the groom to travel in preparation for the wedding to go to the home of the bride. And there he would engage the father-in-law. Nice idea, isn't it? And they would work out the details of the plan, you know, what the final pieces of the dowry were. And so the guy would travel with his little entourage. You know, we call them, what, best men, or we call them best man and attendants and that kind of thing. They would ordinarily travel along with him for support, you know, in case the father-in-law, not really. But they would travel along as support, and he would go and he would meet with the father, and they'd work out the final details. Then he would take his bride and bring her back home. The bridesmaids, meanwhile, they were waiting. They would have these torches, and they would wait and wait because they knew there was quite a delay. You know, if he was quite a character, he might stop off to have a little nip, you know, to get the encouragement before meeting the father-in-law. He and his friends would have a little shot, you know, to help him out, give him a bit of courage. Or he might be delayed in terms of, you know, father-in-law might be a little more restrictive about what he wanted to go with the girl. And they'd work out those details. So there was a big time space there, but the ladies would wait with their lamps and be prepared. And then when he would come within earshot of the village, they would go out to meet him and they would escort him with these lamps lit and bring him on in, and the celebration would begin. It was really quite simple. But it was a lovely experience. And Jesus took people who were listening to him. They knew exactly what he was talking about. And so it sounded like a very simple parable. And the solution sounds simple, right? When I was growing up in school and we read that parable, I would say, man, what was wrong with those buggers? Why wouldn't they share their oil with the other ones? Doesn't that make sense? Doesn't it make sense? Sure, why wouldn't they give some of their oil and, hey, let's go marching on into town and celebrate? That's where the nuance is. Right there. The story that Jesus is telling is very subtle. They knew the subtlety of it. It wasn't about the oil. The oil was just emblematic or symbolic of. What Jesus was talking about was heart. No matter how much oil I would pour into your vessel, it would not bring to life if your heart is not properly disposed. The light comes from the heart, a heart that is open and receptive and forgiving and reconciling and not critical and judgmental and fault-finding. A heart that is open to receive is a heart that projects the light of Christ in the world. It really wasn't about the oil, no matter how many drops of oil. And the things that I do and the things that I make a decision to do and to be and to become, that's the oil for my lamp. That's what helps me to journey in Jesus Christ. And no matter how much of it I pour into somebody else, it's not going to work in their lamp, because unless they are willing to change their hearts and their attitudes and their dispositions, no matter how much good I do, it really ain't going to help them. If I don't want to be changed, if I don't want to be shifted, if I don't want to change my heart and have oil and respond to the invitation that he is extending to me, he's not going to pressure me in any way. That's why it's a great parable. They understood it really well. For us, the nuances in it, very important to find. because you could pour oil endlessly into somebody's lamp, but if they have a heart of stone, you are wasting your time. If you are not willing to respond to his invitation, what are you doing? Marking time? It's a great story. It's our story. And it's a personal invitation. That's what I love about it again and again and again. It's a personal invitation. Do you want some of this or not? But if you do, you're going to have to be ready. That's why you know not the day nor the hour. And so to live appropriately and to live with a disposition and an attitude that is willing to be forgiven, accept forgiveness, but extend it in kind and not hoard it and not be unforgiving in our own lives. Wisdom. That's what it was about. Do I have the wisdom to turn to him and say, Lord, change my heart of stone. Let me become like you.